This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you. By a vote of 261 to 155, the House passed the Regulatory Integrity Act of 2015 on Tuesday. This is a bill that would force the EPA and Army Corps of Engineers to withdraw its proposed Waters of the U.S. rule. House Ag Chair Mike Conaway testified the current form of the rule is a massive overreach of EPA's authority and will impact nearly every farmer and rancher in America. While EPA says the rule provides clarity to producers about what is and is not regulated, Conaway says the rule allows nearly every body of water in the country to be federally regulated. For a look at this week's livestock markets, I spoke with market analyst for Water Street Solutions, Arlen Suderman.
Well, we're continuing to see good strength in the cash hog market, and the product market is moving higher as well. The problem is the futures market got too far in advance of the cash market. We're starting to see a little bit of softening in the demand for the product, and so therefore the packer margins are going negative. So now we're seeing a correction back lower in the lean hog futures market. Long-term fundamentals for the hogs, I think, are still relatively fundamental. This market had simply gone ahead of itself and now needs to correct itself. Over in the live cattle futures, we're seeing a little bit different dynamics. And there, the live cattle futures traders have been skeptical of strength in the cash, continuing to believe that the cash cannot hold the market, but yet the cash market does continue to exceed those expectations and does continue to do better than expected. So it keeps pulling the futures market up. The futures market comes up, but then says, oh, it can't hold it, and it goes back down. So the long and the short of it is we see that June live cattle are trading largely between 148 and 152 on the board. Periodically, they'll spike one way or the other outside of that trading range, but neither rallies nor breaks can be sustained, and it continues to reflect that skepticism. Demand for beef is strong. It seems to be strengthening now as we go into barbecue season, but we're also importing a lot of beef as well, and the relative strength of the dollar is helping facilitate those imports to meet some of that demand. It's still a very fine balance that packers are maintaining, but they've been able to do so in a way that maintains positive profit margins, so they do have some incentive to pull more cattle through the packing plants, and they have been doing so in recent weeks, increasing the kill, but the supply has been increasing as well. So far it's been a very precariously balanced supply and demand, but generally supportive of prices so far, keeping the cash dragging the futures along.
The beef industry has been testing the limits of how much consumers are willing to pay for beef products, and that limit testing does not look to be ending anytime soon.
Well, we've been pushing the limit, and the trade continues to think the consumer's going to run away from the beef and not consume the beef. They did drop from steaks down to ground beef, but they wouldn't leave their ground beef. And even when pork prices plummeted over the last 6 months, yet the demand for beef has remained there. And that's been one of the things that just has amazed the entire industry, is the resiliency of demand, or the inelasticity, the economists would say, of demand for beef, and particularly ground beef, but also now as grilling season starts for the steaks as well. So if it were not for the imports of beef, we'd be running into some real shortages here and probably be looking at much higher prices.
Meanwhile, avian influenza is spreading to more poultry farms, but this time it's a different strain.
Well, we had our first confirmation of avian flu in Indiana. Ironically, it's not the same strain that we've been seeing through much of the center of the country. It's a strain that we've seen on the West Coast. So a little bit of a mystery there for our government officials trying to figure that one out. But nonetheless, it is a spread of avian flu. We've lost over 30 million birds already, either through direct death from the disease or from culling to prevent spread of the disease. And it continues to be a problem for the poultry industry. For a long time, initially, avian flu was seen as bearish for pork prices. Now it's seen as supportive for pork prices because we're starting to lose enough birds that it's seen as removing competitive meat supplies from the marketplace.
Suderman says the pork industry is looking to benefit from the hard times in the poultry industry, something they were unable to do a year or two ago with the beef industry, thanks to the PED virus.
Ironically, the pork industry had a similar opportunity to grab market share when beef supplies became very tight, but could not do so because the PED virus was then attacking the pork industry as well. Well, now the pork industry is healing, shall we say, and learning to manage the PED virus problem, and so it's in a little better position this time around to expand and take some of that market share away from poultry.
Again, that was market analyst for Water Street Solutions, Arlen Suderman. That's all for part one of this afternoon's farm show. Stay tuned for part two coming up after this. Last week, weather conditions in many areas proved favorable for fieldwork. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says corn planting advanced 20% to reach 75% overall, ahead of the five-year average of 57%. Corn emergence across the U.S. is now 29% compared to the 24% five-year average. Rippey says soybean planting is also making good progress, with 31% of the crop planted as of May 10th.
Well ahead of the five-year average of 20% and last year's 18%. Leading the nation, tied with Mississippi, 70% of the soybeans planted in Minnesota. Again, that's phenomenal compared to both the five-year average progress of 17% and last year's 3%.
Locally, we're seeing similar progress in corn and soybean planting, according to Kyle Brazzi of CHS in Shipman.
We did get the majority of the corn planted. I'd say in the geography that I work with for CHS Shipman, we're probably 90% planted on corn. A few of those acres do not have any chemicals on yet. We had so much wind and really kind of struggled with that at times to be, you know, proper steward to the environment, and we want to go when everything is correct. We'd love to have those chemicals on, but in some cases we don't have those fields sprayed. So we're going to adjust some plans a little bit and make sure that we're taking care of those plans and ending up with clean fields at the end of the day. Some chilling injury I have seen on a few of the corn plants, where we see that plant kind of curled up or look like a corkscrew where it's coming through. So the cold, wet conditions that we've dealt with here lately, starting to see some of those plants hurt a little bit, but relatively low percentages when we think about what we see in the field. We also had some soybeans planted, and some of those fields are sprayed with pre-emergence herbicides, which is a big deal in our area. We do have some Palmer amaranth and some resistant water hemp that we have to deal with, so we'll be adjusting chemical plans and making sure that we're scouting to take care of all of those as well.
Brazzi says that as the area's wheat crop also develops, it may be time for some fungicide applications.
We're seeing some wheat fungicides starting to go on, so we've hit that 10.51 feeks growth stage where it's time to put on the Prosaro and Caramba applications. And we've also seen some aphids and some armyworms in a few fields. So I guess we'd like to think about a preventative type treatment with some insecticides and would suggest you talk with your crop specialist on that. Also seen some other diseases in wheat, a little bit of barley yellow dwarf. On that flag leaf, we see that purple discoloration on there, and some septoria. So the fungicides that we're applying can help a little bit with the septoria.
But as farmers wait for their fields to dry out so they can finish planting, Brazzi says the biggest piece of advice he can give farmers is to be safe.
You know, I'm going to always end on safety. CHS has such a safety mind with all of our employees and stay really conscious in that. And we work a lot of hours, including the farmers that we work with, to try and get everything done in a short window. Remember to be safe, and hopefully we all get home at the end of the day.
Again, that was Kyle Brazzi with CHS in Shipman. That's all for this afternoon's Farm Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besh. Thanks for tuning in.